Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, Mark James on Sports Radio WEEI.
Johansson across Coyle. Score! Charlie Coyle! He threw around in front. Pasternak. He scores! What a backhand by Pasternak! Connected right through to Krug, and here's Kruger's shot. He scores! And the Bruins have surgically and decisively taken a lead in the series, 2-1, with a 7-2 win tonight in St. Louis.
I'm gonna tell you a story.
What is St. Louis gonna understand? And maybe they'll get the point after losing to one of Boston's teams for the fourth time since 2001, that they're just become Boston's bitch at the end of the day. The Mark James Experience here on WEI, 617-779-7937. Allow me to introduce the most interesting man in Boston sports media. You can follow him on Twitter. His appearance today has created quite a stir on social media. William Benditson. And your tagline, William, because you have the
best Patriots coverage in the business.
Yes. Well, good to have you here, William.
Thank you.
Good to have you. Yeah, it's a lot of people on social media wanting to see if you're going to come on today. We appreciate you coming on. And listen, I'm going to get everybody's phone calls. So hang in there, 617-779-7937. You've heard Hope in California and some of the phone calls today about the White House visit. There was a woman yesterday. Nick, do we have Susie in Brookline? Susie in Brookline yesterday, who Hope in California blame the Red Sox season on going to visit Donald Trump in the White House and saying that, you know, Trump is a racist. We had another interesting caller yesterday, Susie in Brookline, who as much as Hope and people certainly on the text line do not like her phone call, Susie in Brookline, she had something that I never thought I would ever hear. And we'll get to that here in a second. But good to have you here with us. And tell everybody what you do and what your website and everything you got coming up.
Well, yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you, Mark. This is great to be here in the studio with so many great people have been before. As many of you probably know, hopefully are reading bestpatscoverage.com. $12.95 for the year and $49.95 for the lifetime passes. Got many lifetime passes subscription. Covered the team for 4 years, and I love covering the Patriots. So I'm going to hope that, you know, this year we did it in a way with Patriots Maven that nobody had ever done it with, the videos, the podcast, et cetera, because it is, after all, sports, right, Mark? And yes. So we try to have fun with it. That's what I try to do with the videos, try to do something different, because there are like...
Well, you did a video yesterday, speaking of, on your Twitter handle that's gotten over 50,000 views in less than 24 hours, out at the Cheesecake Factory in Burlington.
Exactly.
Okay, so like that's... You kind of gone viral a little bit.
Yeah, I enjoy all the more attention, the better.
That's
I'm
it.
Not going to pretend like I don't enjoy attention, you know?
Well, I think we all do.
And
we
if you're
all
in this business, you got to enjoy attention, right?
Well, and what makes you, you're very different. You're unique in your own way. And you have... You're very interesting, William, and we like having you here. We're going to take some phone calls. People want to chime in. Before we go to that, the White Sox going to the White House. You've heard all the phone calls that have come in today on attributing that and saying that maybe there could be a divide inside the clubhouse of the Red Sox and why this team is 9.5 back.
Yeah, I think it's crazy. Yesterday, we had a call about the environment blaming for the Red Sox. Today,
the litter
outside Fenway Park. And it's like, what other excuse are you going to have? It's Donald Trump or the litter. No, they're just not playing well. There's a reason they're 500. Their bullpen has struggled. You know, it's a disappointing season. I don't understand. The Yankees are playing a lot better. Why there seems to be a mentality or whatever else to try to blame things. Maybe there is a divide in the clubhouse, but you know, teams with division have won before. It's not like every team that won has, you know, great unity. I remember everyone thought that the 2001 Patriots were so unified and everything. And years later, Bill Belichick said, yeah, you know, we had the standard arguments that they won. And, you know, people like to blame the 2011 collapse on the chicken and beer. But it was the pitching, too. I'm sure there were other teams. Nobody got on the 2004 Red Sox for, you know, drinking whiskey shots before the game. So, you know, when you have fun in the clubhouse and you win, it's, oh, great. And when you don't, then it's all the fun is to blame.
So, right.
I think every team's got to have its personality, and I think it's on the field. Yeah, I'm sure there are divisions, you know. Like, you made a great point about the White Sox, you know, the White Sox. I mean, that's who was at the White House, but, you know, if the Patriots go to the White House, I don't know if it's scheduled yet or not. They won the Super Bowl, but even the last time they went, I mean, how many African-American players will be there?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
they're just not going to go. I mean, Devin McCourty.
But here's the thing, though. Belichick went.
Yeah, Belichick didn't go. Brady didn't go.
Alex Cora could have done more help for the people in his native home of Puerto Rico than by not going. Oh, we do have that call yesterday from Susie in Brookline, in case you missed it.
Oh, I've seen litter all over Fenway when I've gone. I've seen it all over the streets outside of Fenway, bottles
okay,
everywhere.
But let me ask you,
and
Susie.
I haven't been impressed. I know Fenway's made a big effort, right, but I don't see the fans recycling or doing anything.
That was her reason for the Red Sox. This is, I mean, I deal with some interesting people here, to say the least.
Well, I got
to
say this. You've had two memorable callers, one blaming the Red Sox struggles on the trash outside Fenway Park,
yep,
not the struggles of the bullpen, the way it's
right,
playing.
Right, the and, garbage bullpen. The
yeah,
bullpen.
The garbage bullpen. No, it's the garbage outside. And also today saying that the Golden State is atrocious. So if nothing
right,
else, you've had a memorable weekend. You have two calls that you won't forget for a long time.
Yeah, Stephen Bridgewater. I mean, dude, I don't know what team you're watching. Golden State is not horrendous, okay? Just saying. Chris in Framingham, you're up next. What's up, Chris?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
I just have a couple of quick points. The Red Sox are 9.5 games back, correct?
Yes.
Yep.
The Celtics are eliminated, correct?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We haven't been living under a rock for the past month.
And the Patriots don't start meaningful games until September, correct?
Yes.
And isn't the Boston Bruins team 2 wins away from another championship in Boston?
This is all correct, Chris. You are on fire today.
Does anybody care to talk about the Boston Bruins?
Oh, dude, we've been talking about the Bruins all show long. Feel free. Absolutely.
I mean, this team is as resilient a team as I've seen since probably the 2011 team.
Mm-hmm.
I'm disappointed in the 2013 team in the way that ended. But this team is like, how can you not love the Boston Bruins right now?
No, they're great. And last night was a total statement game when they were facing, you know, they had obviously game 2 was not their finest hour. And then they came back last night. And Chris, what a performance. I mean, we're going to come into your place. We're going to beat the hell out of you. We're going to eat your food. We're going to dance with your wives, and we're going to make, and we're going to make you sit there and watch. And then we're going to basically, do whatever we want to do and trash your house.
And that's exactly what they did. And, I mean, I don't know. I'm looking forward to hopefully closing this thing out Thursday night, and then, geez, we'd have to get the Ducks boats going again. Are those
Chris,
things maintained properly?
Chris, again, for the third time in 9 months. Third time. Hey, Chris, don't forget, you got to understand one thing, Chris. It's been 109 days since this city has enjoyed a world title. It's a drought, okay?
Oh, my God, that's forever. That's crazy. TV. I don't know how we.
I don't know. Like, how did we? You know what's amazing is, like, you remember obviously the Red Sox, William. You grew up here in New England, right? And they went 86 years in between World Series titles.
From in the 1990s, there wasn't one Boston team that won a championship.
Nothing.
From 86 to 2001, no Boston team won a championship.
And then all of a sudden now, it's like when a team doesn't win it or doesn't even get there, like the Celtics now, you are the Fredo Corleone of Boston sports teams.
Get the duck boats
well
ready!
Said.
You know, you are the black sheep of Boston sports teams. You are the weak link of Boston sports teams. What is wrong with you? Because now it's like you got the Red, like, and even though, forget about what the Red Sox are doing right now, even though it's tough to.
It's
because,
still not that long ago that they were having a duck boat parade.
Duck boat parade here was in November. Okay, they're coming off 108 win regular season. They won 119, including the playoffs. The Patriots had one of their worst regular seasons, probably the worst Patriots team to win a Super Bowl. And now you got the Bruins, who were one of the best teams in the NHL, but they were owned by Tampa last year in the playoffs. They have been owned for like 6-7 years by the Capitals, except for they beat them the day of the Super Bowl this year, and no one remembered because the Capitals had beaten them like, I don't know, it was like 17 straight times. And now it's like the Bruins are going to win the Stanley Cup again, and it's like freaking Celtics.
I know.
The freaking Celtics, you know?
And you know what's funny? Going into the playoffs, and maybe I was wrong on this, I would have thought that the Celtics had a better chance to win than the Bruins. For some reason, I was behind the Celtics. I thought that they would get it together. You know, they were a tease all season. But let's not forget, the Patriots, for instance, 11-5, struggled on the road. I think they went 3-5 on the road.
Yeah, they had a losing record on
the road. They lost to five teams, the Patriots, that didn't make the playoffs. Five teams that didn't make the playoffs. I thought their season was going to end in Kansas City. It almost did. But for them to go into Kansas City like that and take a 14-0 lead by halftime showed a mental toughness that the Bruins had when they're down 2-0 in game one, a mental toughness that they have last night after losing in overtime in game two, a heartbreaker, and a mental toughness that the Red Sox had last time when they lost an 18-inning game. So I don't think it's the talent with the Celtics. I think it's the mental toughness, because you're going to be tested if you want to win a championship, and they didn't have the mental toughness when the chips were down.
No, and they were better last year without two of their top players, Kyrie Irving, their best player, and then Gordon Hayward. Yeah. They went for the last. So it's like,
they went all the way to game seven of the.
And they had a shot to win it with like about 6 minutes to go. They had every chance to win that game.
You know what it is? It's hard to play as a team when you have Kyrie Irving.
Right. 617-779-7937. Dan in Springfield. What's up, Dan?
Yeah, I got to say, just off of that last note, it's hard to play as a team when you got a guy like Gordon Hayward signed to the contract that he has and requesting minutes because ownership demands it. They're not going to let a guy sit on the bench who's making that much money and to be playing them. They're going to give him minutes. Because he rightfully so should be producing in those minutes. I understand that. But the Boston Celtics need to do something else. I understand getting rid of Kyrie Irving, because Kyrie Irving, first of all, should have stayed with LeBron James, because that's what he was supposed to be, was a sidekick. But we need to get somebody here around people and surround guys and make a complete team. If we're going to trade everyone away for Anthony Davis, we're going to be in the same place. So it don't make no sense. And the other thing I have to say with Tommy Curran the other day, you know, about people, you know, we're only hockey fans when it comes around the playoffs. Well, this is the thing I got to say about this town. We deal with a lot of playoffs all the time. So if you're not about winning championships, then we don't really care. And that's all I got to say. And Mark,
yep,
you do a great job.
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate that. 617-779-7937. Hey, the one thing, William, Rob Gronkowski came out today.
He said, don't expect me to play next year. And I think this is consistent with what he said all along. Gronk is really enjoying life for the first time. He's traveling with his girlfriend. He's doing a lot of the charity work. He does have some back issues. I don't see it happening anyway right now that he comes back. Now, the one thing is, look, training camp comes along. Every training camp for the past 8 years, he's been showing up in Foxborough to catch passes. So what he's doing now is not that different than what he's used to doing. Now, come August, he might get the itch to play. or if they struggle through the middle of the season, because the tight end position is a mess right now. Ben Watson suspended the first four games. I don't even think he has anything left. They got Austin Seferian Jenkins, who I think stinks, and they got Matt Lacoste, who I don't know. I think his career high is 27 catches. So the one proven pass catcher they have on the roster right now, Julian Edelman, he's 33, just signed an extension. Despite what all the writers are saying that N'Keal Harry is the next whatever, we'll see what he can do.
And he's a rookie. He's never caught a pass in the league.
He's never caught a pass in the NFL. And my concern with him is his ability to get open, you know, separation. They all say, well, he can make yards after the catch, but if he can't get open, that's pretty useless. And then the rest of the receivers, it's a wide open. I mean, Philip Dorsett is inconsistent. He did have a touchdown catch in the AFC Championship game, but let's not forget about Philip Dorsett. There's a reason they traded for Josh Gordon last year. They didn't have confidence in Philip Dorsett.
But then after Josh Gordon went away, Dorsett stepped up.
Yeah, he did.
He did step up. As a matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken, he had the second highest catch rate in the league next to Michael Thomas at one point. He did.
Yeah.
At one point last year in December, Brady, like literally, he was, now granted, he didn't get as much volume as Michael Thomas did because he's not out there as much, but Dorsett's been good for the Patriots, and he's been that go-to guy. Brady's been able to rely on him, and he's, you got to earn that circle of trust.
He's done just enough to want to keep him around. In other words, like the Buffalo game, the first game, they didn't have he didn't have a catch. Then the Jets game, he has a good game. He has a big touchdown catch at the end of the first half against Kansas City. He didn't have a catch in the Super Bowl, so he's done just enough to keep him around.
Yep.
The other thing with Dorsett is he has blazing speed. Let's not forget he was a first-round pick.
Out of the U.
Yep. So he has blazing speed, and Indianapolis gave up on him after only 2 years. He's in his fifth year. I don't think anybody, the Patriots, want to give up on him. That said, they only signed him to a one-year, $2 million deal. The commitment is not huge to him. But I think Belichick still wants to give him a shot. I still think they regret they end up making a decent-sized offer for Adam Humphries, but I still think they regret not, you know, like they did with Stephon Gilmore. They knew they wanted Gilmore 2 years ago. They came in. They blew everybody else out of the water with a big offer. I think that's what they should have done with Humphries. I think they're a proven receiver short, and I think Humphries was the guy. I think he would have been a perfect fit in this system, better than Cole Beasley. You know, coming from Tampa, he had production. Tampa stinks. So,
but he didn't want to come here, and the Patriots offered more money.
But at the end, that's the key. Tennessee had a better offer. Then he called back at the end. If the Patriots had blown out of the water at the beginning, I don't know if it was he didn't want
but
to
here's
come.
Here's the thing. At the end of the day, well, we had this conversation a year ago when Brady's receivers were Jordan Matthews, a hurt, often injured Malcolm Mitchell.
Yeah.
Then they brought in Eric Decker. And at the end, did it matter?
No, they went through, I think I did the count, 10 receivers in training camp last year.
Did it really,
because
truly
Brady
matter?
Will figure it out. I mean, look at the look at the junk he threw to in 2006, Rashe Caldwell, Jabbar Gaffney. And he still went to the AFC Championship game. And they didn't lose that AFC Championship game because of the offense. They lost it because of the defense. They couldn't hold him in the second half. So, I mean, Brady will figure it out with the receivers.
Yeah.
One other thing not to forget, everyone, and I know I maybe probably overrate him a little bit, but I'm a big James White fan. I think he's still one of the best pass-catching running backs out of the backfield. And I know talking to Wade Phillips at the Super Bowl, they dedicated a lot of attention to taking James White out of the game. So that's a part of the passing game. And I think if the receivers struggle, they'll get White involved. And again, look, their division is woeful. You know, I mean, Buffalo's terrible. The Jets are a mess. They don't even have a GM. The coach got the GM fired. And Miami looks like they're tanking for two in 2020.
Well, so, which, by the way, is a bad thing to count on because I do not think he's going to translate into the NFL.
Yeah.
He's short, small hands, lefty quarterback. We'll come back with more. We'll take more of your phone calls on the other side, 617-779-7937. But now it's time to trend.
This is Mark James on WEEI.
There's a few things. First of all, we're the least penalized team in the league in the first three rounds, and now all of a sudden we've taken 14 penalties in one series. So, I don't know. I don't buy into all that, to be honest with you. I think that we can definitely be more composed after the whistle. I think we've let, you know, some frustration get in there where we're maybe do too much after the whistle. So we'll clean that up for sure. But like I said, we're the least penalized team in the league coming into this series. So, you know, I don't.
Craig Berube, a guy who's complaining about the calls. Listen, when you're down 2-1 and someone came into your house and punked you the way the Bruins punked him last night, it's always easy.
I know.
To complain. I mean, it's the now.
three power play goals by the Bruins.
Four.
So
it's like, I mean, you know, it's real easy to always blame the zebras and stripes and say, listen, if the Bruins could ever want to complain about a call, which is the call Columbus, the netting, remember the netting goal where it came down and Panarin scored the goal off the netting and the Bruins were like, what the heck? And didn't cost them that game, but I mean, it is what it is. I got to tell you, so far in this series, if anything, I think Bruce Cassidy has more of an argument than Craig Berube. And when you're down, it's political. You're politicking for the for the calls to go your way. And he knows that his goalie is now been shell-shocked. He was a deer in the headlights last night. They had to pull him. He gave 5 goals on 19 shots.
I think you could have done better.
Oh, anybody could have. You could have been better than that. And all of a sudden now, let's revert to, you know, the calls. Dude, what call last night? Okay, you want to blame that the third goal, the Corrali goal at the end of the first period? I mean, come on, man. That it wasn't offsides whatsoever. It was in the defensive zone for the Blues. It was not offside. It is what it is. Things happen. Your team, they got punked. They had no answer whatsoever for the Bruins. They had no answer for Tuca. And that's why they're in a 2-1 spot right now with a chance to go up 3-1 tomorrow night.
Well, and don't you think, Mark, it always strikes me as sour grapes when it's a close game. Say it's 3-2 you lose. You lose 7-2. I mean, you get bombed. And you're talking about the officials? It's just ridiculous. I understand, but I agree with you that I think Cassidy has more of a gripe. And I understand he's frustrated for power play goals, but look, I mean, power play is part of hockey. You got to stop them. It's one thing to let up one power play goal, never mind 2, 3, 4. And look, give the Bruins credit. I was reading in the Globe today. I mean, that, you know, obviously, I think we all agree Tuca's going to win the Conn Smythe Trophy. But if anybody else deserves consideration, it would be Torrey Krug.
I don't know.
I mean, I would obviously, if I had a vote, which yeah. I don't, I would vote for Tuca. But I think right. Krug, his puck movement has been so impressive that he should deserve some consideration. I mean, they were awesome to watch last night. You didn't have to be a hockey fan.
No.
They were just dominant.
No, and you can tell they took game two personal, which is exactly what they should have.
Game two was just a continue. It's like, it was almost like, you know, the overtime goal in game two happened so quickly. It was almost like the Bruins just wanted to get back out there and just smash them. Because they so regretted losing that game at home in front of their fans.
I don't think, William, that the Bees got the puck past mid-ice in overtime of game two. I don't remember it going past.
No, it didn't. It
at all. I just remember it felt like St. Louis had 12 guys to the Bruins' 5 skaters on that ice. And it was like Tuca was just under, and I don't blame him for that goal. It was just the fact that they had nothing left in the tank. I don't know, whatever they did in the intermission between the third period of the end of the third period regulation to overtime, I have no idea what happened there because they had no energy left whatsoever. None.
Yeah. I mean, I will give St. Louis credit. I thought after game one, this could be a sweep. I really did. I mean, the Bruins looked great in game one. They started slow, but came out fast, you know, responded and dominated them the rest of the way. In game two, I mean, St. Louis probably said, we got to win this. They came out and they fought. The Bruins clearly the more talented team.
Yeah.
Well, team. And it's like to get a win, St. Louis, I was impressed.
I just think Binnington's shot now. And I think tomorrow night he has nothing left. They had to give him the hook.
I mean, they have to win, obviously, tomorrow night. They can't come back to game five down 3-1.
They'll start. Berube will start Binnington more than likely. He's not because, I mean, he had to pull. I mean, listen, any coach would have pulled him last night. Probably more coaches would have pulled him when it was 4-0. And then he let it get to 5, and it was like, okay, this guy's got to go. It was 4-0.
I mean, it doesn't matter at that point, but a goalie is based on confidence. And at that point, he's got no confidence. And if his confidence is shot in game three, you want it to at least have maybe a modicum of respectability heading into game four.
How about them running Tuca in every play? Like the dirtiness of the tactics that they're getting really dirty on Tuca. Like this is a team that, and they're not getting the calls. Bruins aren't. If anyone wants to bitch and complain, it's Bruce Cassidy because they're running Tuca all the time, and there are no calls against the Blues every time they're near the Bees net. None.
You know what, I have to say, I don't think the officiating's been great either way, but I think the Bruins probably have a little more of a gripe, but I guess the best thing you can say is the officiating's not deciding the series. And if that's the case, I agree with you, they're running at Tuca. Tuca's been fantastic. I mean, they wasted a great performance in Game 2, but, I mean, I expect them Game 4 to come out and be dominant again.
Yeah,
it would surprise. I mean, look, St. Louis, it's their season, so maybe they're going to give some fight, but they look out of gas. I mean, this is a great story. There were people... there were people that predicted the Bruins to be in the finals. I saw the predictions at the beginning of the NHL playoffs. I didn't see anybody predict St. Louis to be
nobody,
in the
finals. Nobody. Nobody.
I mean, I didn't see anybody.
Well, nobody predicted the Bruins either, but once the path opened up.
A couple people I saw, yeah. But you're right. I mean, there was other more. And the path to the Bruins was as ideal as could be because of
oh,
what
my God. I mean, you you couldn't have gotten earlier Christmas Hanukkah gifts for the Bruins than Tampa and Washington and the Penguins all being eliminated.
Yeah, I think if they had to face one of those teams, particularly Tampa, they lose.
I wasn't worried about Pittsburgh this year. I didn't think Pittsburgh had a lot.
I didn't think they could beat Washington, the Bruins, but some people did. So.
And Washington's owned them. They've owned them for years.
It's like any sport. Certain teams have the edge over other teams.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and for the Bruins right now, all they have to do basically for tomorrow night is just continue to do what they did. I think now they're feeling it. I don't think they could. Anything can happen. But if they went I don't think they could blow this series if they tried. Even Tuca has been the one constant. I can't remember any game. I maybe one against Toronto where he actually had a really bad game. That's probably it. I mean. He has been as good, if not better, than Tim Thomas was in 2011. He's been as good, if not better, in this team right now.
I think he's been better. I mean,
yeah,
Thomas was incredible
has.
against Vancouver. But if you remember in that Vancouver series, I think the Bruins won in 7 in the Stanley Cup. But games 1, 2, and 5 in Vancouver were blowouts, right?
Mm.
At home by Vancouver. And a lot of goals. Now, some of it was a porous defense by the Bruins, but... I mean, Tuca, I can't remember a playoff performance this good. I mean,
no, he's been good. He's been spectacular, yeah. And he's going to shut a lot of people up, including me. That's what he's going to do.
He really has. He's shut everybody up.
And now after this, he's going to deliver the way David Price delivered last year for the Red Sox. And people still don't like Price, but people do like Tuca. And they, you can't, you know, after this performance, I mean.
And they win and his critics go away. Yeah. Now he's got a Stanley Cup. You know?
I mean, his worst part was blowing a 3-0 lead against the Flyers in 2010.
Yeah.
And then he had a really bad series against the Blackhawks in the 2013 Stanley Cup, and that wasn't good. But now it's time for Tuca this is his time. This is his moment. This is like Paul Pearson 2008. Like I said, take a
good analogy.
With Curt Schilling, 2013 with Big Poppy. We're going to look back on 2019, said that was the Tuca run. That was the Tuca run. This is it. He's going to win. He will go down. He wins this. He'll go down as the greatest goaltender in Bruins history.
After
he wins this, you can no longer take that away from him.
Me and you weren't watching in the 70s.
No.
But
Jerry Cheevers.
I know. But for us younger people, I still think great. I mean, he's just been sensational. And, you know, Thomas was good in 11, but I think Tuca has really taken it to another level.
Peters, Andy Moog, Rogi Vachon.
Definitely better than Andy Moog.
Yeah, Andy Moog, but, the Bruins ran.
Definitely better than Byron Defoe.
Oh, yes.
A puddle.
Yes.
Which is the meanest thing that can be said about a goaltender.
Byron Defoe. That, like,
name from the past.
Oh, man. That guy was just, wow. If there was ever a guy who... He let more things through. No, I'm not going to say it because the body's still warm. Never mind. I was going to say something, but I don't want to disrespect the dearly departed.
I want to ask you, everybody, Tuca and disappointing in the Chicago Stanley Cup, but I kind of gave Chicago more credit for that
Taze
comeback.
And Kane.
Yeah, I kind of gave Chicago. I mean, they were sensational. Chicago that series. I just thought, wow. You have to that's one of those series. I'm usually we're Boston people, so we usually criticize Boston. Whatever, but Chicago, that series, I mean, the play of their forwards was
great. They had a run of cups, too. You got Taze and Kane. They got great goaltending. You can't take anything out. Chicago's really good. Tuca wasn't ready, and he's never lived that down, but now this is his redemption song. This is his chance to finish the job. He's in a zone, and I thought... He's a little rusty at the beginning of game one, but then he calmed down, and then game two was one of his best performances, but the Bruins just couldn't get it done. All right, final segment coming up next. William Bennett's in the house. We'll take your phone calls. You want to talk Red Sox, Bruins, Celtics as free agency beckons upon us, and just about, it's still a month away, really, 4 weeks away, June 30th. Actually, 4 weeks from almost this very moment. from literally right now as we speak, 6 o'clock, so in 17 minutes, it'll be 4 weeks until free agency begins in the NBA on June 30th at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 4 weeks from just about right now. All your phone calls next, 617-779-7937.
This is Mark James on WEEI.
All right, final segment, 617-779-7937. We can get to your phone calls. William Bennetson in the house. William, a lot of things is on the table. Yes, we'll get you want to talk Bruins, you want to talk Red Sox. Red Sox big game tonight. Will Fleming coming up at 6:05 with the pregame before David Price takes a mound tonight against CC Sabathia. Price's house of horrors in his career is Yankee Stadium. He just can't do that. Before I get to all that, this is actually a really good story that's making its way around right now. Dwayne Wade, former NBA player who won 3 titles with the Miami Heat, addressed Stoneman Douglas High School down in Parkland, Florida, which, of course, you well know where that horrific shooting, I believe 17 people were killed last year from some deranged kid who was in school there. And Dwayne Wade spoke to them at their graduation today, and he actually to the graduates with a theme of starting a new chapter in their lives. I'm sure that meant a lot to him. He's a huge hero down in South Florida, so I'm sure Dwayne Wade that meant a lot to them. And obviously, you know, even time will never heal those wounds when everything and all the people that were lost and how that will affect them forever. But I thought such a gesture by Dwayne Wade to go to speak to those guys, to all the girls and the boys who graduated today from Stoneman Douglas High School, considering what happened a year ago, which was absolutely reprehensible, heinous, horrific, and one of the biggest tragedies that we've seen is a shooting here in America. So kudos to Dwayne Wade for doing that. I know he's not thought of so highly here, even though I think that Paul Pierce is completely way out of line when he said he was better than Dwayne Wade, because he wasn't. That's neither here nor there. Good move on the part of D. Wade.
Yeah, I know this story pretty well. My family lives down in Florida, and they went to actually see the memorial when the Douglas Stoneman thing happened. They had a memorial service. And I just know that from what my family told me, that they were devastated, the community.
Of course.
I mean, you lose 17 kids. And I think it was 17, but whatever the number exactly was, and injured, and just imagine having.
And one of the coaches took, like, he was a human shield to protect the students. I believe it was the football coach.
Yeah, exactly. And he was a human shield. So obviously, usually in these situations, there's always one or two stories, hero stories of valor, somebody who took their lives. But I mean, just for those kids to go back to school after something like that happened, it devastating. I think Dwayne Wade understood what happened, the effect. He grew up, I think, in Chicago.
So he did.
He's seen.
But he's been in
Miami. No, what I'm saying is he's seen victims of gun violence in Chicago. So he knows what it can do to community, and just a really classy move. I know people often are critical of athletes, or they think they're spoiled or whatever because they make the millions of dollars. But I think Dwayne Wade is about as good a guy
as he is a good dude in
the business. He realizes that he has a platform, and that people seeing him, even though they don't know him during a time of tragedy, it brings him some degree of happiness and maybe makes them feel a little better, because if somebody at Douglas Stoneman High School can
Stoneman Douglas can
say, oh, Dwayne Wade cares about us, we saw Dwayne Wade, it's something to uplift.
Oh, it's great. And he's such a hero anyway in general, not only for what he did on the court for the Heat, but just for the fact that, he's given back to the community his entire time down there. I was down there at the U when he was a rookie with the Heat, and I saw him, and I covered the series in 06 where he put the Heat on his back. They were down 2-0 to the Mavericks and came back and won 4 straight games, and he won the finals MVP. So, and then he won a couple more with LeBron and Bosch afterwards. So that's a really cool thing, man.
For Wade. And he has a sense, and he's spent his career there. I mean, pretty much.
A little pit stop here in Chicago and Cleveland.
A little pit stop in Chicago, but...
In Cleveland. But, yeah, Cleveland. He went back to Miami to close out. You know what I like, what he did, too, is, like, he actually went back to Miami and he played for the Heat. Because one of the things that bothers me, this brings us to our next point, is that I hate the one-day contract signing.
I do, too.
The dog and pony show.
It's such a pony show.
It's so stupid. It's so dumb. You didn't, like
you didn't retire as that player. I mean, in other words, so you played another place 5 years. Now we're going to sign you
right.
a day contract.
That's so dumb.
Everybody knows what. It's almost as stupid as, I think, when the NCAA takes championships out of the record books. It's like everybody saw the
right,
game.
I know
what happened.
I know. It's
Why
so,
are you
it's
denying
so dumb.
That it happened?
It's so dumb. Like, I hate to say it, but folks, but... And he was my favorite player growing up here in Massachusetts. Ray Bourque did not retire a Bruin.
No, he retired it at Colorado Avalanche.
That's it.
Everybody knows. And what's the big deal? So does it demean his career that he didn't retire as a Bruin?
No.
Now,
I give credit to Dwayne Wade because he actually, the last 2 years, went back to play for the Heat.
Okay,
so
that's
fun.
Different, yeah.
Scottie Pippen went back to play for the Bulls at the end of his career. He actually played. So that's different. But, like, when literally this happened, Jeff Conine, Mr. Marlin, who led him to the 97 World Series, Jeff freaking Conine goes back and retired as a like, wow. You know what? Man, I don't know what I ever would have done if I could have slept that night not knowing that Jeff Conine went back to the Marlins and retired as a Marlin. Like, give me an effing break
and why
here.
Would you, just as a joke, why would you want to retire as a Marlin?
Right. No, I know. Exactly. Like, that tells you where their franchise is. If he's Mr. Marlin.
You were down there not to get on a Marlins thing. Yeah. That 97 team, they blew it up.
Oh, they blew it up the next year. I think it was Dave Dombrowski, too.
They just blew it up. John Henry.
All right. Final quick segment. We'll wrap it up next. We'll hand it off to Will Fleming for Red Sox pregame as they get ready for the Yankees in the finale tonight at Bronx Stadium.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.